This is Frank.
Now more with Frank Gaffney.
Welcome back. It's a delight to say Matt Brodsky is back in the house, at least virtually. We catch up with him from time to time about the developments that seem to be happening now with astonishing rapidity in his portfolio. Matt is one of our country's preeminent analysts and commentators on matters in the Middle East, having associations with past and present a number of think tanks in the Washington, D.C. area. He is also a prodigious contributor to the public policy debate through his writings in a whole series of outlets. He's a frequent guest of ours, as I say, and we always welcome him, but particularly at a moment when there's this major upset happening in Washington and elsewhere around the world over President Trump's decision to withdraw post-haste some 2,200 special forces operators on the ground in Syria. And he's going to explain it all to us right now, I'm hoping. Matt, I'm not sure you can, but welcome back. Let's talk about what you think is going on here.
Well, I think when it comes to Syria, we know the president has always wanted to get out of to get our troops out of there. The decision came, which itself is not a surprise since he's publicly been on record saying that. But what it does is it not only pretty much sells out our Kurdish partners to begin with, but it is going to allow Iran to have its established land corridors, between 3 to 4 of them even at this point. It expands the area in which Israel now is to be concerned about how Iran is transferring precision-guided weapons or those type of weapons components to Hezbollah. It also means that ISIS is not only going to be resurgent, because it's just folly to assume that they were defeated. We were fighting them on the very day that the decision to withdraw was announced. So ISIS will remain and reconstitute itself. And another aspect of this is that even if this decision were to somehow miraculously be reversed, the damage we have done to our own credibility to begin with already is nothing short of amazing, and it'll be really hard to reestablish. We had a really good Syria team in place that was empowered, that the president apparently just did not agree with or believe in. And it took them months to dig out of the, or to get out of the hole that the president created when he said that he was going to pull everyone out of Syria back in March and April. They were finally able to do that, to convince Arab allies not to contribute to the Assad regime's reconstruction, but to keep that money on hold. And a number of other items that we had gotten together with the United Nations to create a pathway forward, constitutional committees, all of that leverage that it was painstaking to reestablish, we have just given away for free, apparently. And I think it's remarkably tragic.
Yeah, it will be, particularly if some of the bad things that are now being forecast to flow from it eventuate. And one of them is the invasion of Turkey. My own personal assessment is that the telegraphing of this punch by Erdogan in a phone call with the president may have been the impetus that prompted him to say, well, I'm going to get our guys out of harm's way by pulling them out. Matt Brodsky, your assessment of what Erdogan is likely to now do with this vacuum of power created. David Goldman earlier in the program mentioned that there's probably a short-term modus vivendi between Turkey and Iran, but that ultimately this is going to translate into a regional conflict, if only because Israel has to take steps to try to prevent the further encroachment in Syria by Iran and its enablers. Talk us through this really important set of issues, if you would, involving Turkey.
I think there can be no doubt that it's based on the phone conversation that President Trump and President Erdogan held, that that's how we came to the decision to remove U.S. troops. But what I find interesting is that while we don't know here what exactly was promised within that
conversation, what grand bargain was struck. From Turkey's perspective, they've been quick to say in the wake of that conversation that they won't be respecting Iran's sanctions and a number of other things.
Including that they're going to go after the Kurds, Hemer and Tong, our so-called allies in that part of the world.
Absolutely, which is, it's unthinkable to then, for any of our allies to assume that the United States will stand with them. I mean, usually at the very top of the list of what one could do to ensure gratitude and, you know, friendship, one would assume that, you know, fighting alongside your troops would be something that would be pretty high on that list.
And the Kurds have been doing a lot of that for a long time, including most recently against ISIS, of course.
Of course, against ISIS, but we could have played this entire situation differently. The Kurds constituted an immense amount of leverage at our disposal that we could have used in any discussion with Turkey, because, of course, there is a long, long list of behavior that's problematic from Turkey that we would like to see changed. It's not like we can just make some grand deal and because Erdogan said so, therefore we can trust it.
Yeah, my fear, I have to tell you, Matt, is that there wasn't really a deal, that there may have been nothing more than Erdogan simply telling the president of the United States he was poised to invade an area of Syria in which U.S. personnel would be at risk. And he was simply advising the president to get them out of there, lest bad things happen to them. But there wasn't a quid pro quo. We'll see. I guess in the fullness of time, there may be some evidence of it. But that would make this pretty much a complete rout if that were the case. And I hope it's not so. But even if it's not, it looks to the rest of the world, including, as you say, our putative allies, the Kurds, that they've been abandoned, right?
Right. And even if that's the case, and of course, there is the argument that we simply do not have the force structure physically on the ground to prevent such an attack from Turkey, then what we have, and let's be clear about it, and then let's have the president come out on television and say a NATO ally threatened to invade and kill American troops. Okay, if that's considered acceptable to the American people, then let the American people decide that. But to me, that seems like a perfectly good reason amongst a long list of others to consider whether Turkey belongs in NATO and whether they in fact are an ally.
Yeah, well, my own conclusion on this, Matt, is that they've long since stopped being an ally and that there is no mechanism for getting them out of Turkey, but there are certainly ways that we can make all of this costly to them, and it should be done within NATO as well as outside. Hey, Matt, let me turn to another topic that I know you're following as well, because it's part of this larger Middle East, and for that matter, part of the larger agenda of our Iranian enemies, Yemen. There has been action taken, as you know, by the United States Senate to cut off all funding for the support that the U.S. military has been providing to the Saudi-led coalition to try to defeat the Iranian-backed Houthi rebels, as they're called, in Yemen. Those rebels have been increasingly aggressive, not only towards Saudi Arabia with missile attacks and so on, but also against shipping lanes passing through the Bab al-Mandeb waterway, the mouth of the Red Sea, a critical passage for oil, much as the Persian Gulf is, and of course the Iranians control the mouth of that as well. Talk us through what's happening here and what you think are the stakes for the United States of following the line that we're apparently headed on now.
I think what we've seen is those who support Iran, those who are in Turkey's camp, and those who are vehemently anti-Saudi.
And pro-Muslim Brotherhood, too.
And pro-Muslim Brotherhood, sure. I mean, there's a long list of people, of traits of people in those camps. And what they've done, first of all, is a terrific bit of branding, because in the U.S. media, and of course not your show because you've done terrific work on this, but it's now been branded as we're against the war in Yemen. Like we're just against wars. okay, let's be clear. What this is an Iranian proxy that's fighting another proxy, and we would like the Iranian side to lose. And as you say, it controls an absolutely vital waterway. I mean, and again, from Israel's perspective, too, as they're looking, you know, somewhat horrifically at developing trends in the region, they, one of the reasons for starting the 1967 war was the closing of the Straits of Tehran. It had to do with Israeli vital shipping, and that was decades ago.
And that strait, of course, feeds into the Red Sea and is one of the critically important ports for the Israelis to move their products in and out of the country, right?
Absolutely. And this is not to say that our interest there as Americans is Israeli, but it is to say that this is another vital waterway shipping lane. It's the Suez Canal.
And another ally that if we're not careful, we will also be signaling we're abandoning. And I'm going to be talking shortly with Rick Fisher about what Israel's already up to vis-a-vis the Chinese, which suggests that they're doing a bit of hedging on the reliability of the United States, all of which is very ominous indeed. Matt Brodsky, we have to leave it at that for the moment, but I know that you will be very fully employed in 2019, and I look forward to our visits in the course of that year. I hope it's a happy one. We all survive it, for that matter. But your work is really appreciated, Matt, as are your insights on so many of these topics. Matt, again, thank you for your time today and for joining us throughout 2018. Have a happy new year, my friend, and come back to us often. Next up, we will speak with